Chapter 22. 20 May 1937. As he caught sight of Greg Mortimer coming up the corridor towards him, Joey felt the hairs on the back of his neck stand erect with the strength of his loathing. "Good morning." Greg passed with a nod, his blonde head held arrogantly erect. "Good morning, sir." Joey was careful not to show the convulsive hatred he felt. Ever since Lizzie had gone, he'd thought of little else but how he was going to make the Mortimers pay for what they'd done. All the Mortimers. He blamed the whole family now. The need to do something had become urgent. Only the greater need for caution had held him back until now. He was determined to bankrupt Greg Mortimer if it was the last thing he did. He couldn't help turning round to study Greg's back. Taller and with broader shoulders, he looked everything Joey would have liked to be himself, confident, successful, and rich. Today he was ready to take his plans a step further. He always had qualms when he was doing something he should not, but thought it unlikely he'd find himself in difficulties today. He told himself he was a fool to feel keyed up like this. In the mail room, the Morning Post was piled high on the table. Slowly he started to sort it. He thought it worthwhile to come in and do it. He didn't like anybody else nosing round in here. Then, with the letters in order, he set off delivering them round the office and factory. He walked more slowly than usual, in case anyone should notice, and was careful to look miserable and say as little as possible. He always felt tense when he went to the stockroom the morning after. Last night he'd refilled Bill's van, and he had to find out if they'd missed what he'd taken. If there was going to be trouble, he had to know about it as soon as possible. He went in, tossed a couple of letters in their tray. "How's things?" he asked. It pleased him to see two of the three stockmen were drinking tea. "So-so," one yawned in reply. Joey relaxed. All seemed well. He had nothing to worry about here. It was time to put his plan into action. He went to a cloakroom and appraised his appearance in the mirror. He didn't look sick, but on the other hand, he didn't look the picture of blooming health. At a washbowl, he rinsed very hot water round his mouth several times, then set off to the first aid post. "I've just been sick," he told the starchy sister. "Been vomiting my guts out. I don't feel at all well." She rammed a thermometer in his mouth and took his pulse rate. "Temperature's up a bit," she said. He was sure his pulse must be too. He was nervous. "How are your bowels?" "Creasing me," he groaned. "Got the trots, too." "You'd better go home. You'll probably be all right by tomorrow." "Yes," Joey said, trying to look as though his stomach was heaving again. He meant to be all right by tomorrow. He watched her fill in a form. "Take this to Mr. Gleason's secretary, so they know you've gone off." "Yes," he mumbled. That part had been easier than he'd expected, but all he wanted to do now was to get away. Outside in the street he felt a sense of freedom. He spent far too much of his time cooped up in that office. He took the bus home. His house always felt cold when he opened the door these days. One glance at the fawn lino stretching up the hall made him feel the icy chill of loss. Everywhere was evidence of Lizzie's presence. She'd chosen the lino and made the curtains. She was here all round him, and yet she was not. The living room grate was full of cold ash. His breakfast dishes were still on the table. Anger was rising in his throat as he rushed upstairs to change. His bed was unmade. He pulled half-heartedly at the sheets to straighten them. The worst part was that Lizzie had betrayed him to Nick Bender. He no longer felt safe in this house because the Mortimers knew where to find him. He had to find another and move, just in case things blew up. From his wardrobe he took out the clothes he'd prepared. He meant to be ultra-careful, leave nothing to chance. He wasn't going inside any bank until he'd changed his appearance. He'd bought himself a white-belted Macintosh and a wide-brimmed trilby with a feather in the hatband. He'd never worn anything like that before, mainly because he hadn't been able to afford it. Immediately, he looked more prosperous. He had to hide his eyes—dog's eyes, his mother had called them, and he'd always hated them. They made him so easy to identify. Spectacles of any sort helped to give his face balance. He'd bought a pair of horn-rimmed reading glasses from Woolworths in the lowest possible magnification. Then he'd painted the lenses with varnish to tint them slightly. He couldn't see very well through them, but he was pleased with the change in his appearance. He carried a briefcase and bought a copy of the Times to put under his arm to complete the picture. He had the wind up again by the time he was on the bus going into town. Just before going into action was always his worst moment. In a tight corner, when he had no time to think of the consequences, he seemed to sail through without the nail biting. To make his plan work, he had to open several bank accounts. For the first, Joey chose Martin's Bank in Birkenhead, because Evans's banked at the Westminster. Before going inside, he put on his spectacles. They felt heavy across the bridge of his nose. He was really on edge now. "I'd like to open a current account," he told the counter clerk, and was given a form to fill in. He stated that his name was Alan Anthony Evans, and he signed it A.A. Evans. He gave a false address and occupation. He'd brought enough pound notes to open all the accounts with cash. He kept a firm hold on his tongue and said as little as possible. At Evans's, some said he still had a Welsh accent, though he was doing his best to lose it. He didn't want to stand out in any way. The whole thing proved very easy. He felt more at ease now he knew exactly what to expect. He headed straight from the National Bank and did it again, this time in the name of Paul Ogden Pendlebury. It would give him somewhere to move his money, somewhere that had no connection with the business. He'd heard that some criminals went to prison and came out to find their money still intact. It would pay him to look after his very carefully. He'd already worked out several other names and addresses, and he went to several other banks. He opened another account, signing A.A. Evans a second time. This time he stated that his given names were Adrian Ainsworth. He was careful to write the name on the inside of each checkbook as soon as he received it. It wouldn't do to get confused between them. When he'd been round most of the Birkenhead banks, he went over to Liverpool and opened a few more accounts there. Joey knew he was growing more ambitious. Now that he had some Mortimer money coming his way, he wanted more, and he wanted it faster. He kept his eyes and ears open as he went about his work, looking for new ideas and new ways to get it. He needed a master key before he could move through the office at night and get to any valuables. He knew the cleaners had one. Several times he'd come to work half an hour early in the hope of getting it from the green tweed coat again. The first time he'd found the forewoman still wearing her coat. Next time he'd found the kitchen full of women drinking tea and smoking cigarettes, their work completed. Then he'd found the green coat missing, though the woman was swinging a polisher about in the hall. It was a wet morning and she'd worn a mac. He ran his fingers through all the garments hanging behind the door, but failed to locate the keys. The problem had defeated him for weeks. He was beginning to feel frustrated. He knew Gleason, Stickler, and Greg Mortimer locked their offices before leaving the building, so they must each have a master key, but he couldn't think of any way to get his hands on theirs. Eli certainly had it on one of the great bunches of keys he fastened to his belt, but Joey didn't want to ask for it. He'd be telling Eli more than it was good for him to know. He spent a long time trying to work out some scheme to trick Eli into lending him his keys. And all the time he carried a piece of soap round in his pocket to take an impression as soon as he could get his hands on it. The day was warm. Inside Evans's, the potpourri of strong flavourings was more sickly than usual. Joey held his breath as he strode through the door of the loading bay and then towards the communicating door to the office. This was kept unlocked during working hours and was much the safest route when he knew he was 20 minutes late returning from his dinner break. He put bounce in his step as he headed for the mailroom. He needed to look as though he was returning from an errand. He had his white mac turned inside out over his arm to cover his briefcase and trilby. It was a major drawback having to bring his bank disguise to the mailroom, but he hadn't time to take it home again, and it would be safer than hanging in the cloakroom. It took his breath away to find Mr. Gleason already in the mail room sifting through the mail he kept on the table.
"O'Malley," he said authoritatively, "where have you been?"
"To the post office, sir."
Joey slid his Mac down in the corner where the stairs came low and returned to the table, doing his best to smile.
"At this time of day?"
"Urgent letter. Catch the early post, sir." Joey hoped Gleason wasn't going to ask who had sent him.
"I asked Miss Peacock to find you before lunch."
Joey swallowed hard. He'd nipped off a little early because he'd wanted to go into town and pay some checks in.
"What I wanted to tell you was there's a vacancy for you in the accounts department."
Gleason was looking at him so hard it was making Joey nervous. "You've been very patient." Joey did his best to appear pleased. Really, he was pleased. It would bring him new opportunities.
"Bring you new opportunities?"
Gleason's words echoed his thoughts, startling him.
"Start next Monday. 5 shillings a week increase."
"Thank you, sir. Thank you very much." He gulped.
"I'm very pleased."
But he wasn't overpleased at the thought of moving to accounts. He'd have to learn a new job when he wanted to concentrate on his own affairs. As soon as Gleason had gone, Joey collapsed on his chair and mopped his forehead. It was hanging around waiting for buses that took up the time. If he was to get round the banks without taking whole days off or being late, he needed transport. He'd asked Bill to pay in the checks that he'd had to accept in payment, but it wasn't good for him to know Joey was getting checks from other sources. Everything would be easier if he had a car, and he wouldn't need to borrow the van in the evenings. He thought about it carefully. He didn't want anything flashy to attract attention. He deliberately chose an Austin 7, like Nick's, except that it had the saloon body instead of the canvas top. Nick had said it was the car of the people, and there were more of them on the streets than any other make. Gleason had one, too. He bought it second-hand from an advertisement in the newspaper and paid for it with a check written on the account of P.O. Pendlebury. He couldn't boast to his fellow workers about owning a car. They'd all know he couldn't afford one on the wage Evans's paid him. He was careful to park it in a side street out of sight of the factory. He didn't use it every day, so he could still be seen hanging around the bus stop with the others and pretend he relied on that for transport. Joey sighed as he surveyed the ledgers and piles of empty wage packets on his desk. He had so much writing to do now. He was growing a seg on his middle finger. He threw down his pen to rub some life back into his hand. Every week he had to write the name of every employee on a wage packet, together with his payroll number and the amount he was due for the hours he'd slaved here. He'd thought going to the accounts department would be a good move, but it had its drawbacks. He didn't like desk work. It suited him better to do fetching and carrying. He missed the freedom to walk about the factory and office. Being pinned to his desk made the day seem twice as long, and he got all the rotten jobs. He had to make out the wage packets, but he wasn't allowed near when the pound notes were being put inside. He was nearer the money, but still not near enough. If he was making up the payroll and working out what everybody earned, for instance, then a few ghosts might be inserted and their wages drawn by him. But he hadn't got within yards of the payroll so far. He'd discovered that the money was drawn out of the bank on Thursday afternoon, and the job of filling the wage packet started behind the closed doors of Mr. Draper's office immediately afterwards. He'd seen the money being carried in. That was a job in itself, and took 3 men. It came in leather bags because they needed silver and copper as well as notes to make up each individual screw. When he'd been on the tea trolley, he'd seen the senior clerk sitting round a large table filling the packets. They hadn't let him in, though. One of them always came to the door to get their tea. He knew the job took up part of Friday, too, because none of them got to sign for their wages before midday. For weeks he'd hung around on Thursday nights instead of rushing off with the rest of the office staff. After many fruitless patrols, he'd discovered where the money was kept overnight. He saw it being carried to a safe in Matthew Mortimer's office. He'd tried to get a closer look at the safe, but the office was kept locked all the time. Joey sighed restlessly.
Would he be able to take the money and get away with it? The idea had been going round in his head since he'd first been given the wage packets. The payroll was an amount well worth taking, but unless he could get a master key as well as the key to the safe, it wouldn't be possible. Joey leaned back in his chair and allowed himself one small grunt of satisfaction. His new job allowed him to handle checks as they came in. He'd initiated Colin, a fair-haired lad who looked as though butter wouldn't melt in his mouth, into his old job. Now he dumped all the mail for the accounts department on Joey's desk twice a day. In his new job, Joey had to open all the envelopes that were not addressed personally to one of the staff. Many contained checks, which he had to pin to the letters accompanying them, place in a folder, and take up to Mr. Stickler for his perusal. Later he collected them again to sort amongst the clerks around him. Now he had bank accounts into which he could pay company checks. He thought it would be simpler to keep a few back for himself. But he missed the privacy of the mail room. That was the greatest drawback of all. He was overlooked from behind by two rows of desks, and there were others on both sides. He could never be sure that he wasn't being watched by somebody, and he had to be careful not to look furtive or suspicious. He kept a shaving mirror in his drawer, so he wouldn't have to turn round too often. Joey stole a glance at Stanley Bream, whom he had superseded as office boy. He now occupied the next desk on Joey's left. All his attention was on his work at the moment, one hand pushing heavy brown hair back from his forehead while his pen scratched on the page. But he'd given Joey a nasty fright yesterday. He'd kept back two checks with their letters before taking the rest up to Mr. Stickler's office. He'd started on another job when Stanley Bream jolted his elbow and said, "Can I borrow your blotting paper for a minute?" Suddenly the blood was pounding in his head. He'd hidden the two checks beneath his blotting paper. Now he anchored them to his desk with his elbow. If Stanley did see them, he'd have to pass it off as an oversight, but he'd lose this chance, and it would be remembered later if anything was found to be missing. He could see the nib of his pen shaking as his mind cleared. "I've a spare piece I can give you." He rummaged in his drawer and produced it. Clerks were issued with only one piece of blotting paper at a time, but Joey had filched a second piece when he'd helped himself to extra nibs. He congratulated himself on his foresight. He was saved for the moment. "Gosh, thanks. I say, do you shave when you get to work? What's that mirror for?" Joey slammed the drawer shut. He could feel the blood running into his cheeks. "I like to squeeze my spots in the dinner hour," he said nastily. He had very few spots, but Stanley was a bad case of acne. He'd been a bit off-hand since then. Joey knew he shouldn't have rubbed Stanley up the wrong way. It never did to make enemies. He also knew pilfering incoming checks was not something he'd be able to get away with indefinitely. Customers were bound to say they'd already paid when the company sent a reminder. And if lots of customers complained, there'd be a hue and cry, and it could be traced back to him. He'd only be able to do it once in a while. He was drooping over his desk the following morning, too tired to keep his mind on his work, after being up half the night loading Bill's van again. Bill was selling so much he needed to restock it more often than once a week now. Joey watched idly as Greg Mortimer strode through the desks in the hall, en route to his office. Once in the alcove outside, Joey saw him take a bunch of keys from his pocket and unlock his door, pushing it ajar. Miss Peacock, his secretary, looking more drab than usual in a dress of gunmetal grey, spoke to him, and he turned back to her desk. Stickler was loping towards the alcove and engaged Greg in conversation next. Joey straightened up in his chair. The key he wanted to get his hands on was still hanging in the lock. He watched, hardly able to breathe, as Greg Mortimer followed Stickler back to his office, and the door closed behind them both. Only Miss Peacock stood between him and the master key. He was willing her to leave her desk. Joey could feel the heat running up his face. He daren't be seen watching like a hawk. He picked up his pen, lowered his head, but followed her every movement with rapt attention. The phone on her desk rang, and she seemed to talk into it for ages. Would he be able to take them while she was sitting only 2 yards from the door?
He was rising slowly to his feet. He needed something to justify leaving his desk.
He had nothing, had already taken the morning checks to Stickler's office.
While he watched, she put the phone back on its hook and got to her feet. She was taking her handbag from a desk drawer. Miraculously, she was going to powder her nose. Would she notice the keys? It seemed impossible that she would not.
Joey was stiff with tension as he covered the few yards. He knew he was in full view of more than a dozen clerks working at their desks, but most seemed to have their heads bent over their ledgers. He could also hear the familiar clatter of the tiern on its trolley, working its way round, but he had to risk it. He might never get another chance like this. He snatched the key ring from the lock and slid into Greg's office where he couldn't be seen from the hall. The key he wanted was the one that had been in the lock. The soap tablet he'd had ready for weeks had dried out in his pocket and was hard. He pressed the key with all his might. He mustn't lose this one chance in a million. So far, so good. But Greg Mortimer would also have a key to the safe, and he had to have an impression of that, too. It must be on this ring, but there were at least a dozen other keys, large and small. The clink of teacups told him the trolley was coming closer, and he'd only have a few moments. He was acutely aware that the door was ajar. He turned his back to it and kept the keys close to his body to hide them while he looked. How would he know which one was the safe key? He was wasting precious time. His mind felt blank. Then he saw the name Chubb stamped on one and felt excitement bolt through him. This had to be it. The sound of approaching footsteps in the corridor was making him feverish. He turned his soap over and embedded the key deeply into it. Then he was picking vainly at it with his fingernail, but couldn't loosen it again. He was sweating as he snatched a paperclip from the desk to lever it free. Out at last. He was gasping for breath as he shoved the soap in his pocket. He put the keys on the desk. He daren't risk being seen putting them back in the keyhole. The keys he'd copied stood out from the rest, dull and smeared on one side. He was wiping them desperately on his sleeve and telling himself he shouldn't have used toilet soap because he could still smell it. He mustn't leave any clues to help Greg Mortimer guess what had happened. The door he'd left ajar creaked fully open.
"What are you doing, skulking in here?"
It was the woman with the tiern. He knew her well. They'd done the teas together until recently. Joey was thankful it wasn't Greg himself.
"Just trying this room for size."
He smiled with what he hoped looked like envy.
"I feel it in my bones. I'm going to get rapid promotion. But when I'm the boss, I'll get a bigger, more comfortable chair."
He sat down on it and swung it right round on the swivel.
"Get off with you," she said, as she put Greg's coffee tray on his desk.
He saw the flakes of dried soap on the red carpet and rubbed them in with his foot. He followed her out, keeping close behind, feeling exultant as he went out to the corridor. Greg was just coming out of Stickler's office. The glance he gave Joey was frosty.
"Just taken your coffee in, Mr. Mortimer," he dared.
Greg wasn't the sort to notice he'd become a clerk.
"Don't let it get cold."
He wanted to laugh. He felt triumphant. Joey took the precaution of going up to the north end of Birkenhead, a district he'd never been in before, to have his keys made up. He didn't want to be known in any shop that cut keys. It wouldn't do to go to the same one twice. Some looked at soap impressions with suspicion and said half-jokingly,
"Going to rob a bank, are you, lad?"
"Wish I could," he'd grinned. "These are for me granny's house. She's 90. And turned a bit funny in the head. Locked me mum out last week, she did, and wouldn't let her in. Had to borrow a ladder and climb through the bedroom window. She wants a set of keys for herself after that."
That night, by the time he was positioning the hand truck exactly where he'd found it, Joey was feeling dead-dog tired. After working all day, the physical effort of loading boxes of toffee onto Bill's van late at night always finished him off. But he had to know if his 2 new keys would work, and wanted to try before he went home. He went quietly down to the basement boiler room, where Eli slept. It was conveniently distant from the route he had to take between the stockrooms and the loading bay, and the unavoidable clatter the metal hand truck made did not break Eli's sleep.
He peeped round the door, and the heat that had built up during the day felt like a wall. Eli was a half-seen mound in his hammock. Joey could hear him snoring softly. He had to make sure, and didn't want to meet him doing one of the security rounds he spoke of. Joey tiptoed away, locking up carefully behind him. He got into the van, drove it out to the street, and parked it round the corner. The street was empty. He let himself back into the office through the side door. It always seemed ghostly at night, with every typewriter under its Rexine cover. The silence seemed eerie. One look round the empty desks brought his heart to his mouth. He pulled on the wool gloves he used to keep his fingers warm on winter mornings. The master key got him inside Greg's office. He felt a surge of power. He could do anything he set his mind to. But the desk was locked, and so was the file cabinet. He was no nearer Greg's personal belongings. He tried the key in Matthew Mortimer's door, and it opened that, too. He felt another surge of power when the other key opened the safe. This was what he'd set out to do after all. Inside it smelled of money, but it was almost empty, just a few papers, a file, and some checkbooks. Joey shuffled through the checkbooks. It seemed Archibald Evans ran several accounts, too, but all were with the same local branch of the Westminster. Suddenly his hand was shaking. With these he could draw money directly out of Evans's accounts, pay it into the accounts he'd opened. It seemed so simple the very idea frightened him. Here was another way to take money from Greg Mortimer. Large sums this time, and without the work of moving boxes of toffee. To make it even easier, a running balance had been kept in the front of each checkbook, telling him how much there was in each account. Thousands and thousands. There was real wealth here. He could feel his heart hammering. He mustn't be greedy and make it too obvious. The checks were numbered, of course, and the balances looked to be in Mr. Stickler's writing. He'd be likely to notice straight away, and would be on to it like mustard as soon as they were cashed. But the entries had not all been written by the same hand. That must make it easier for Joey to use a check without it being noticed straight away. He looked again and found that two checks, each for £100, had been drawn in Greg Mortimer's name on the contingency account. Joey wished he knew what a contingency account was used for. Greg Mortimer's would be the safest signature to forge on the check, because he'd be entitled to sign checks on all the accounts. Joey turned it round in his mind. If he wrote Greg Mortimer's name on the balance in front, would Stickler be likely to question it? He didn't think so. Dare he? Joey was in a lather of nerves. He decided he'd try one check to start with. It was too good a chance to miss.